For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website. Thank you, Taigen, and thank you to everyone who is here. My apologies to Gyoshin and David and Hakusho, because I'm going to be giving some of the same talk that I gave last week, because I really wanted to talk about camping sesshin. And I guess now, you know, having had a week to reflect, you know, maybe my talk will be a little bit different, but it will still contain some of the same elements and photos. since a picture is worth a thousand words. But I really wanted to talk about camping sesshin, which this was our first one at Ancient Dragon, and I think we learned a lot of all really wonderful things. Even though maybe some of them were things that we would do differently, it was all learning and all, you know, the result of sort of intimacy with the experience, and really, really valuable. You know, our intention when we sort of first started talking about it, myself and Gyoshin, was that we wanted to find ways to bring our practice to the natural world. And, you know, the sort of outside of the Zendo and outside of the city, and not so far outside that it would be prohibitive for people to get there. We actually wanted to be, you know, pretty close so that people could even just come up for a half day on Sunday. And I think we did that, but I think we also accomplished things that I hadn't really considered, you know, at the outset. And I think that, you know, a lot of what we accomplished was just gaining a level of intimacy with our environment and with each other as practitioners on the experience, and with ourselves. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So as far as the details, you know, we spent 3 days and three nights in a bunch of campsites grouped together at Illinois Beach State Park last weekend. And we had our Zendo, you know, which was a tent, basically a tent canopy that was 10 feet by 20 feet. There were walls at the short ends, and then the long sides were just rolls of fiberglass window screens. So the whole thing, you'll see a picture of it when the pictures come around, it really kind of just breathed, and you never really completely felt like you were inside or outside or in between. So it brought to mind, you know, sort of the lines from the Song of the Grass Hut, and I'll be talking about that in a few minutes. I want to make sure everyone can hear me okay. So we had our tent Zendo. We had a lot of the same regular sesshin forms that people who have done a half day or an all day or a 3 day sitting here are familiar with. We had zazen, we had kinhin, we had dharma talks, we had meals together, and then we had other things like zazen on the beach at dawn. We were close enough to the beach that we could all pick up our zafus and wrap them in plastic bags and walk them down to the beach and sit on the beach and, you know, kind of watch the world wake up. And we had wonderful silent nature walks, which were led by Gyoshin and which really allowed us to get a feel of where we were and be part of that, and I'll talk about that as well. We also had Dharma talks. So we had, on the first day, Gyoshin talked about kind of the natural history of our area, you know, the geography, but also the species that are available, the kind of land that it is, the fact that in Illinois, only the stretch that is actually the park is the way that the lakefront was, you know, sort of untouched and unspoiled. Everything else has been developed. And so when you're there, you really get a sense of, like, this is what, you know, this whole area was like hundreds of years ago before, you know, people came out and colonized it. I think, you know, when Native Americans were living there, it was much more just natural and untouched. But so we learned a little bit also about human cultures and the ways in which, you know, we've impacted the land or have been able to work with the land, and then different species, which was very helpful when we were on the nature walks to know a little bit about what we were seeing, because the walks were silent so that we could really just be there. And so that was one talk. Our longtime Sangha member Nathan, who is now living in Michigan, came out for the retreat, and he gave a talk about sentience, the concept of sentience, as in sentient beings, and problem solving, and how each one kind of the key aspect in his talk about sentience is that a sentient being is one that can perceive and respond to the things around it in such a way that they're able to solve problems in their lives, whether that's evolutionary over many lifetimes or whether that is, you know, kind of adaptively in this one lifetime. And then I, on the third day, talked about the Song of the Grass Hut and related themes, kind of like I will be doing now. But we really spent 3 days cultivating samadhi. Samadhi meaning, you know, just calm abiding. And fortunately, we didn't really encounter anything that was super challenging for that. Like if we had had, you know, massive rainstorms or, we're in a place where we don't really have any predators. So it made it a lot easier to cultivate calm abiding. But also we were, you know, really having to sit with sort of whatever came up and just be present with the, you know, the sun coming up and the sun going down and the sounds of, you know, kind of the world waking up around you and the world quieting down and, you know, kind of what that looked like and what that felt like for each of us that contributed to the sense of samadhi and just being able to relax and be present with whatever was happening. But we also cultivated a sense of interdependence that I think we do during Sesshin, but we did in a whole different way. You know, we had the typical Sesshin jobs of Doan and Kokyo and Ino and Tenzo, but we had other jobs as well. And we had people whose job it was to bring us firewood and people whose job it was to... To set the fire and tend the fire, and people whose jobs it was to bring ice or to bring water, so that there was a great feeling of, you know, really we are all doing this together, and we really, you know, relied on each other in ways that, you know, we don't always in our lives. We're not always aware. You know, we chant maybe the meal chant of we reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. But it was so much more apparent, you know, when you know, you realize that you're not going to be cooking anything unless somebody brings you fire and you know, firewood and sets a fire for you. So interdependence was another aspect of something that was intimately and immediately at hand for all of us. But we also, you know, I think starting with Laurel's talk, we really cultivated this idea of sanctuary, of meeting the source in everything. And Laurel had a wonderful quote that I wish I would have asked her to bring today from Gary Snyder about talking about how, you know, much of the world does not have the opportunity to build elaborate temples and, you know, huge structures. And so what we need to do is to be able to find a sanctuary in wherever we are and to just be able to find the sacred in whatever's presenting itself to us. Because even the things that we maybe don't really like, you know, mosquitoes, they have some purpose in life, you know, and so finding ways to, you know, just respect and appreciate things as they is together was a big part of this session. So I'm going to read a koan that kind of reminded me of this, and I'm really going to just delve into this very superficially, but it is case 4 from the Book of Serenity. The World Honored One points to the ground. And the introduction goes, as soon as a single mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. With a single horse and a single lance, the land's extended. Who is this person who can be master in any place and meet the source in everything? So that was certainly a question that was kind of rolling around in my mind as I, you know, experienced all of the things that I'm describing to you. And the case for this case, it goes, as the world-honored one was walking with the congregation, he pointed to the ground with his finger and said, this spot is good to build a sanctuary. And then Indra, who they describe as emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground, and said, the sanctuary is built. And the world-honored one smiled. And so we did, you know, we built our sanctuary right there on a patch of grass. It seemed like a good patch. It was flat, and it was free from a lot of anthills, unlike the first patch that we chose that we decided was just not going to work. And then we had sort of this experience of that I think is represented by Indra, who is the, you may be more familiar with the image of Indra's net, which is the net that kind of extends across the entire universe and has a jewel at each knot in the net, and each jewel reflects all the other jewels. And so, you know, in building our sanctuary, we were able to really experience that a little bit, you know, the sanctuary that breathed with the wind, and sort of stayed together, partly because we kept kind of building it. So while I talk, I'm going to send the pictures around now, and the first one is the picture of our grass roof hermitage. Not really grass roof, but at least grass floored. So we had these wonderful nature walks where we walked past something called the Dead River and the wetlands around that. There were we saw deer, we saw toads, we saw sandhill cranes, we saw actual cacti. And we could really be present for just the different causes and conditions as they change. There was one point where we're walking in the grasslands and you can just sort of hear the rustle of grass and not really register it, but then we moved to a point where we were on a gravel path and you could really hear the difference, you know, between the grasslands and the gravel path and just the ways in which things are, you know, kind of supporting us but also, you know, very different. And it really gave very much of a feeling of experiential knowledge. And one of the things that I was thinking about during this session was the distinction between our intellectual knowledge that we gain from maybe a Dharma talk or from somebody telling us something, or, you know, we know that Springfield is the capital of Illinois, for instance, and the difference, and so comparing that kind of cognitive knowledge versus our more experiential knowledge that we know what it feels like, you know, when you walk from, or what it sounds like when you walk from the grasslands to the gravel path, and the ways that we're actively sort of storing and working on all this experience. And so one of the things, excuse me, that we encountered was first 2 days we had these beautiful, lovely nature walks, and the third day we also had a beautiful nature walk, but our nature walk was slightly different in that we walked past a whole bunch of dumpsters that were sort of in the back of the campground and filled with, you know, kind of the detritus from the campground. And I think it was, you know, maybe the fact that this was our third walk and our third day of Sesshin, but it really, you know, kind of struck me, and I think it struck everyone that, you know, we ordinarily think of dumpsters as being kind of like, you know, yuck, why do we have all this garbage? I hate this. Or, you know, we want to hide it. And so it was hidden in the back of the campground. But I think there was, you know, there was even a sense of appreciation for the dumpsters and for the picking up and cleaning and taking care of the environment. The third day, we also happened to sit on the beach, you know, for Zazen in the morning. And unlike the first 2 days, which were like beautiful and pristine and, you know, we're sitting by the water and it's just so lovely, third day, we get to the beach and there's all this kind of, you know, kind of trash on the beach and there's a lot of flies and, you know, and I'm kind of sitting there at, you know, 5:30 in the morning going, what happened? And, you know, I thought about it for a little bit and I was like, well, Saturday happened, you know, it's Sunday now, and Saturday everybody was at the beach with all their stuff and, you know, and they haven't really had a chance to clean all this up. They've obviously cleaned some of it up, but there's still some left. And it really made me appreciate the dumpsters in a whole different way. You know, as we reflect on the efforts that brought us this food, we can also reflect on the efforts that bring us the beach or that bring us a clean campsite. Or, you know, I could just go on and on. So this was one way in which, you know, even something like dumpsters started to feel a little bit like a sanctuary, you know, that we can bring some appreciation to all these different aspects of our experience. So I do also want to talk about the Song of the Grass Hut, and I think I do have enough time to actually read it, because what I would like to do is I'd like to just pick out a few of the lines once I'm done reading it. But before I read it, I want to suggest something, which is that, and I think Teigen suggests this all the time, but maybe you are like me in that, you know, periodically you get sort of song lyrics that pop into your head from some, you know, particular song. And this happens to me all the time, and what I've noticed over time is that very, very often, the song lyrics that have suddenly come into my head have something to do with the situation that at hand. And the one that really made me know it, the one that comes into my head a lot is the Styx song, "You're Fooling Yourself If You Don't Believe It." And so I know when that's coming into my head, I'm like, okay, I got to think about what I'm doing right now. where am I going with this? But so what I want to suggest is that a lot of Zen texts can be just like that. If you let yourself, you know, without really trying to sit down and, you know, I'm going to memorize this, get familiar with it enough so that periodically a line will pop into your head and see what that does. You know, see what that line maybe is about in what's happening. And that was a lot of how I spent this Sesshin. And I'll tell you a little bit about, you know, my thoughts on some of the lines. But let me read the Song of the Grass Hut. So it goes, "I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, she doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 feet square, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A Mahayana bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west, firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window below the green pines, jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats, trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instructions. Bind grasses to build a hut and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. So that is by Shito Sichan, or Sekito Kisen, in the Japanese version of his name, who lived from 700 to 790. And there's a lot in there, and there's so much I'm not really going to talk about, but I will talk about, one of the things that, among the things that Shito, I think, is talking about is, he's talking about the ways in which our lives and life itself requires continuous maintenance. Even awakening requires continuous maintenance, as in, as Dogen would say, kind of experience the vital process of on the path of Buddha going beyond Buddha, that we have to continually bring that feeling of, or that possibility for awakening to our lives. And so there are a lot of, kind of repeated imagery here. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The minute we stop, weeds are just springing up. Life is continuing to go on, even though maybe we've stopped paying attention to something or stopped building something. He also talks about bind grasses to build a hut and don't give up. And the things that became relevant for me with this sesshin were things like, we had to sort of, we were constantly setting something up and then cleaning it up. I was constantly pulling stuff out of the truck, food-wise, and then putting it back in the truck, partly because there was always the threat of rain. It was always just about to rain, and you never knew when it was going to happen, and mostly it didn't happen. But there was constantly this sort of natural rhythm of we're gonna set something up, and then we're going to end, and then we're going to start something else, and then we're going to end that. We had a situation that the screens on the sides of the grass hut would not stay up. they were stuck on with duct tape, and our work leader Hakusho had to continuously tape and retape the screens. It seemed like they had about a shelf life of about 3 hours, and then the screen is down again. And so our lives very immediately required constant maintenance. Another line is, thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. And, I think Shito is talking about his own, discourse, as well as all of the Zen texts and Buddhist texts that predate him. But he's also talking about maybe what I'm suggesting, which is that we take these words and we use them, we take these teachings and we, just allow them to sort of flow over us and help us to approach the problems in our own lives and the problems in the world and find some way to make that intellectual knowledge experiential knowledge, which is kind of what I'm recommending. Don't separate from this skin bag here and now. Just be with what's happening and allow yourself to gain some insight. So the insight that that Hakusho gave me at the end of the sesshin was that 36 safety pins would keep those screens on for good. And I was really struck by, 36, really? And he's like, I've had some time to think about this. And so I'm sure it's 36. But no, I mean, he was very kind about explaining to me, how many you do across, and then you do one partway down. And then I know that it will work, because I could see what the problem was. But those are the things, you know, that's I think what I mean about intimacy, that you can't always know something, you know, intellectually before you give it a try. You know, we learned lots of things like, you know, we need more time for lots of different things. And this was wonderful to learn. It wasn't, you know, nothing, it didn't make it so that anything was really, you know, not conducive to practice, but there are lots of ways that we learn to make, you know, give us a little bit more of a feeling of ease. So, you know, we really had much more intimacy than we do maybe in our normal daily lives, that from, you know, communal meals and communal living together, even though most of us were all in our own separate tent, we're all kind of there and we had to, you know, wake each other up, sitting with and responding to conditions, or, you know, observing and enacting solutions to problems, all of these things we figured out how to do together. Okay, one of my favorite lines from the Song of the Grass Hut is, "Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests?" And I remember this was the first thing that struck me on my first sesshin that was an overnight sesshin, you know, where people are kind of there and you're in a remote location. And it was that, you know, we were on a break. It was the middle of the afternoon. It's a completely, you know, nothing is happening. There's nothing to do. Everybody's just sitting around. And it kind of just struck me right then, like, oh, you know, everybody who's here is going to stay here. And not because they're being entertained or somebody's saying something clever, but there's a feeling that, you know, people have made a commitment to being here. And that is a really powerful feeling to know that people are just going to stick it out, whether it's painful or uncomfortable or, you know, we need to maybe figure something out together. That is one of, I think, the most profound aspects of, you know, being part of a community that I think we can find. And I'm not sure that that's really what Shitta was really referring to per se, but I think, for, you know, just in my own life, there was that feeling of like, okay, everybody's here, everybody's going to be here, and we're going to figure this out together. And that's really, you know, no small thing. So there's so much more I could say about the Song of the Grass Hut, but I want to start to close this talk, and I'm actually going to close it with a passage from Suzuki Roshi, our original ancestor in America. And in the book Not Always So, in the chapter Respect for Things, I think he has something very relevant to say about the blade of grass or the grass hut, just along that same theme. So he says, "If we think it is easy to practice because we have a beautiful building, that is a mistake. Actually, it may be quite difficult to practice with a strong spirit in this kind of setting, where we have a handsome Buddha and offer beautiful flowers to decorate our Buddha hall. We Zen Buddhists have a saying that with a blade of grass, we create a golden Buddha which is 16 feet high. That is our spirit, so we need to practice respect for things. I don't mean that we should accumulate many leaves or grasses to make a big statue, but until we can see a big Buddha in a small leaf, we need to make much more effort. How much effort? I don't know. Some people may find it quite easy, but for someone like me, great effort is needed. Although seeing a large golden Buddha in a large golden Buddha is easier, when you see a large Buddha in a blade of grass, your joy will be something special. So we need to practice respect with great effort." So I think he's talking here about the ways in which we can work with ourselves to see something sacred in everything. But he goes on to say, "In this Zendo, everyone can come and practice our way. Experienced students and also those who don't know anything about Zen, both will have difficulties. New students will have difficulties that they could never have imagined. Old students have a double duty to do their own practice and to encourage those who have just come. Without telling them, you should do this or you shouldn't do that, the old students should lead the new students so that they can practice our way more easily. Even though newer students don't know what Buddhism is, they will naturally have a good feeling when they come to a beautiful Buddha hall. That is the ornament of a Buddha land, but for Zen Buddhists especially, the true ornament of the Buddha hall is the people who are practicing there. Each one of us should be a beautiful flower, and each one of us should be Buddha, leading people in our practice. Whatever we do, we are considering how to do this. Since there are no special rules for how to treat things or how to be friendly with others, we keep studying what will help people practice together. If you don't forget this, you will find out how to treat people, how to treat things, and how to treat yourself. So I just have so much appreciation for everyone who came forth and put this sesshin together. Even people who were not there who contributed in different ways. And I hope we will do this again next year. I feel fairly confident that we will do this again next year, and I would be very open to finding ways to help people participate who had reservations about participating or who just plain don't like camping. And I thank you all for being here today. I'm hoping we can have a little discussion or questions or anything. It doesn't have to be about camping. It could be about any of the texts as well. Gyoshin. Very relevant to our situation on Irving Park Road. David. Yeah, I think wasn't there one who came into the Zendo at one point? And
yes.
Yeah.
There was an ant that went round and round and round on the incense holder, and I was thinking he was doing king.
Paula. Yeah.
What struck out in me is that's the issue for us when we look out into the world and we see things that we want to respond to and we have knee-jerk reactions to them, but we're not really intimate with the problem. So I felt it was a great example to say, if you want to respond skillfully, you really need to dig in deep and get very familiar with the problem so that you know how to respond skillfully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that alone, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for observing that. I think it made me, when you said that, it made me think of, you know, the ways that Taigen and others from the Sangha have gone to different protests and sad and, or just other different events. I think Bernie Glassman is very famous for bringing practice to places like Auschwitz or, you know, the Badlands of South Dakota. But we can bring, you know, we can bring that sort of practice mind or sesshin mind to any place in our life just by kind of remembering, you know, just remembering to sort of, you know, take a step back and sort of observe and try to wake up. Thank you.
This one, it's quite possible that 36 safety pins is a great idea. It's actually not that great in reality.
We'll know next year. In Chicago. Oh, wow.
Let me know if you're interested. I'll pass on information.
Yeah.
Josh and all pastors in my tradition have said something to me about some kind of retreat in Chicago. So, yeah, I think we must find out about that. And you were talking about the song on the grass night, which beloved chants, one of the lines that is one of my favorites, which you didn't mention, which is, seems relevant to this echo of hundreds of years and relax completely. And I think to see, to realize 36 as the number of safety pins, or in any other situation, we need to really relax completely, which is not what we usually think of as how to problem solve. How do we relax completely into whatever situation or problem we face?
Yeah, relaxing with problems is not, I think, what most of us are schooled in.
Right.
The 36 safety pins at the title for a book.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. What can you do with 36 safety pins?